Good afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday, May 26, 2021. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports on Global Patriot Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Every Wednesday, whether you want me here or not. And, you know, lots going on this week and the last couple of days, of course, but let's talk about some other shows. Every Monday night, Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays, Eric with Radio Free Kafiristan. I'm here on Wednesdays, of course. And then Thursdays, the deplorable Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, Andrew Herod is in, sometimes 11 a.m., sometimes 12 noon, from what I understand, with Conservative Casual Friday, a.k.a. Islam in Focus. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakdok with the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And Sunday, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Great stuff. But again, that's the one. You can't just come in willy-nilly. You got to register, get the app, et cetera, so that sleaziness cannot happen, because it has in the past. And that's kind of a crappy thing to do to someone, especially a guy as nice as Eric. But it's happened, and so, you know, got to take care of it. Let's see. What else is going on? Okay. If you want to listen in, there are a couple ways to do it. The best way, in case you want to talk to me as well, is to call 319-527-6706. You could also just come to blogtalkradio.com, hit the live button on the upper left, and then you'll look for, down the lower right, you'll look for Global Patriot Radio. It'll tell you how many people are here. You can do it with an account. You can do it without an account, from what I understand. You can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, at HPolySports. And I'll tell you, Sue from New Mexico, who's listening on the phones, she does that. She finds a lot of stuff. She's got great stuff. Facebook, I know a few people will follow that and actually comment at times, but just look for Hank Jones PolySports. But the best way, the coolest way, 319-527-6706, unless, of course, you want to get into a little internet banter with your online listeners, then come in that way too. Some people, T. Bodie, when he's available, does it both ways. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about T. Bodie a little bit later in the show. Not to mention, next door in Hank Haven, next to Electric Hankland Studios, is Mrs. Hank, who is dutifully listening on and is getting ready to head out because she's going to go do some paddleboarding, from what I understand. I'm going to do that later as well. You know, I didn't talk about it last week because it had just come over the news, but Lee Evans talked about, he died last Wednesday. Lee Evans was the world record holder for 16 years, I believe, for the 400-meter dash. Didn't really talk about it. Now, he at the Olympic trials, had set the world record in 1968 at 44.02 or 1.12 maybe. And then in Mexico City, he ran 43.86, the first person under 44 seconds. Rarely did people break 44 seconds for quite a while, until Butch Reynolds broke the record in 1983 or 84. So, yeah, he was an amazing guy. You know, you hear about John Carlos and Tommy Smith, but Lee Evans was the one who organized a lot of what they wanted to do in Mexico City as far as making their voices heard, not about protesting, not about things like taking a knee. He did not ask Tommy Smith and John Carlos to do the Black Power salute, but he did say, we need to make our voices heard. He faced a lot of flack for it behind the scenes, but in addition to running the world record, he and his teammates also set a world record in the 4x400-meter relay, which is traditionally the last event of the track portion of the Olympic Games. After that, he kept running. He was ranked number one the next couple of years, or number two in the top couple. In 1972, he had been injured in 1971. In 1972, he finished fourth in the Olympic trials. The top three were Vince Matthews, Wayne Collette, and a guy named John Smith. Now, John Smith held the record for the 440-yard dash, sort of the yardage equivalent of the meters. John Smith got hurt in the semifinals. He could not run in the finals. So Lee Evans couldn't run as an alternate. They didn't allow that back then. He then was going to run in the 4x400 meter relay. Unfortunately, Vince Matthews and Wayne Collette got bounced from the rest of the games for, wasn't a black power salute, but they were talking on the medal stand and generally just being disrespectful is the way it was seen then. So Lee Evans never got a chance to run in a second Olympics. He then went pro. There was that ITA, International Track Association, that started up in 1972 or 73. Probably the most famous athlete in that was Brian Oldfield, a shot putter who at that time threw something further. The world record in the shot put was 72 feet 9, I believe. He threw 75 feet at a meet. Was not counted because it was considered professional. Oldfield, when they allowed amateurs or guys to regain their amateur status, Oldfield came back and threw very well. Lee Evans did not do as well. He came back and tried to come back in 1980 after the folding of the ITA. When he went to the ITA, he switched more to the 400-meter hurdles, which is a brutal event to run. I mean, I ran 400 and 800 and, you know, the mile in high school. And the 400 is tough, but the 400 hurdles, I never tried it. I can't imagine, because it's basically running flat out over hurdles for 400 meters. He did not have as much success there because it's not simply a matter of being fast. You have to have hurdling technique, et cetera. He also ran the 800 meters, did not set the world record. He was hoping that he could eventually do that. He did not, but he was a great athlete. He then coached for many years. He coached in college level and then in Africa at one point, helping some of the programs there get their track programs going, and then passed away last week, as I said. So, I didn't talk enough about it. Just an amazing athlete, an amazing part of that group in the late 60s and early 70s when the United States completely dominated. Other than when the Soviets and others started using steroids. Anyway, that was last Wednesday. Later that day, we lost Australian country singer Johnny Ashcroft at the age of 94. Now, look, I've never heard of him. I doubt any of you have. But I crack up at the idea of non-American country singers. I don't care where they're from. When they say country, what do they sing? What the hell do they sing about? Do they use their little colloquialisms? You know, like, would he sing, "Oh, my exes live in Texas, mate"? I mean, I don't know. It just kind of cracked me up to see that. Roger Hawkins passed away last Thursday. He was 75. He had ongoing health problems. Now, many of you probably haven't heard of him either, but trust me, he was a musical powerhouse. He was one of the main cogs in the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, and he co-owned Muscle Shoals Studios. Now, here's a partial list of people that he played on backing. Percy Sledge, Aretha Franklin, Wilson Pickett, the Staples Singers, Cat Stevens, Duane Allman, Boz Scaggs, Joe Cocker, Paul Simon, Bob Seger, Rod Stewart, Bobby Blue Bland, Albert King, Traffic, and Willie Nelson. He also recorded with Clapton in the 1980s. The reason I bring up, he was a drummer, a session drummer, so to speak. A couple names I brought on there, Duane Allman and Boz Scaggs. Now, people think of the Allman Brothers, and they think of Boz Scaggs with, Lido Shuffle and Lowdown. But Boz Scaggs and Duane Allman played some extensive sessions back in the 60s and 70s at Muscle Shoals Studios. Anyway, here's my favorite song that Roger Hawkins played on. I'll give you a little bit of it. It's a Bob Seger song.
Midnight, trying to get my courage up.
Yeah, so that's a Bob Seger song called Main Street, and Roger Hawkins was the drummer on that track. So kind of interesting, but you think so much of the people nowadays, it's all about faces, it's all about imaging. It's rarely about musical. I shouldn't say that's rarely about musical talent. As an example, you think of the Backstreet Boys. Justin Timberlake is uber talented, extremely talented, but there are a lot that aren't. But they make it on face, they make it on marketing, etc. But these are the guys that played unsung behind the scenes, and don't get the kind of credit. So Roger Hawkins, rest in peace, last week at the age of 75. Also last week, last Friday, Roman Kent at the age of 92. Now, again, I'm bringing up people. Most people don't know who this guy was. He held an office of great importance. He was a Polish-born American who survived the Holocaust and World War II. But most recently, he served as president of the International Auschwitz Society. Now, that group was formed in 1952 by survivors of the camp to support survivors, as well as to combat racism and anti-Semitism around the world. So may God comfort you, Mr. Kent. May we all never forget that it's possible to both remember our past and work toward a greater good. British distance runner Ron Hill passed away last Sunday. Now, Ron Hill was 82. Among other things, he had a consecutive streak of running at least 1 mile a day. He maintained that streak from December 20th, 1964 to January 30th, 2017. Yeah, he held world records at various distances, including 10 miles, 15 miles, 25 kilometers. He was the second man to break 2 hours and 10 minutes for the marathon, the first being Derek Clayton. He represented Great Britain in the marathon at the 64 Tokyo Olympics and the 72 Munich Olympics. He placed seventh in the 10,000 meters at the 1968 Mexico City Olympics. In 1970, he was the first British runner to win the Boston Marathon. He set a record then of 2 hours, 10 minutes, 30 seconds. He then followed that up with his sub-210, running 209.28 at the British Commonwealth Games Marathon. So that's pretty impressive. He finished 19th at the 64 Olympics. He was 6th in 1972. And then in 1981, at the age of 43, he won the inaugural China Coast Marathon. Never won an Olympic medal, never got a marathon world record, but he definitely had his impact on the sport of long-distance running. Monday, Paul Christie passed away. Now, some of you may not know who he is. If you followed wrestling at all, especially in Chicago, like Brother Tommy and I, Paul Christie was a somewhat babyface in Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder's WWA promotion. And then I think around 1977, he made what's considered one of the best heel turns ever. So yeah, Paul Christie was 82. No cause was given, but yeah, considered one of the greatest heel turns ever. Also Monday, John Davis passed away at age 66 of COVID-19. Who was John Davis? Only one of the key actual voices behind the fake singing group Milli Vanilli. Folks, you know it's true. Yeah, I don't have a drum to hit there on rim shot. Former U.S. Senator from Virginia, as well as Secretary of the Navy, John Warner, passed away yesterday at 94. He's probably most famous for being the sixth of Liz Taylor's seven husbands. Yeah, heart failure. Chronologically, he was the guy before Liz's last one, Larry Fortinsky. So, yeah, kind of high profile, but he'd been out of the limelight for a while, obviously. After what we saw in Italy last Sunday, folks, I think I may have taken my last cable tram ride. For those who haven't seen or heard about this, a tram taking visitors to mountaintop views in the Italian Alps fell to the ground like 100 meters before reaching its destination, killed 9 of the 11 occupants. It had actually been renovated in 2016, with most of Italy being closed since early on in the COVID-19 pandemic. There probably wasn't much maintenance done in the past year. And I normally love those things. I really do, but now maybe not. Maybe not. Let's get to some politics. Just to show you how neutral Yahoo is, here's a headline on their webpage the other day. It says, "One more threat to Democrats, control of House." Underneath there was a headline that read, "The whole decade is on the line." Seriously. Seems a big left is lamenting the fact that redistricting is taking place, because of census data, population shifts, etc. that are factors beyond their reach. It laments that several congressional reps of Democrat persuasion are leaving their seats to run for other offices. Why? Because data suggests that their own districts are not going to be safe anymore. Interestingly, a couple Florida Congress types plan to take on Marco Rubio for one of Florida's Senate seats in 2022. In both cases, you're talking about candidates who raise a significant outside, i.e. from Nancy Pelosi's controlled PACs. Interesting, in that race, what would happen if they had to split that laundered Pelosi money? Also in Florida, former Governor Charlie Crist, who is now a Democrat after spending time as a Rhino, he plans to try and take back the office of governor from Ron DeSantis. Good luck, Chuck. Frankly, a worse GOP governor never existed, not even when Mittens was governor of Massachusetts. Okay, the New York Times had a disgusting article on this is disgusting. It promotes an article. It promotes the idea that attacks on Jews is good for Republicans. The author was Michelle Goldberg. Basically, she said attacks on Jews over Israel are a gift to the right. Said recent flagrant public assaults on Jews, which she said was more reminiscent of the sort of anti-Semitic aggression common in Europe. Oh, really? She says it's really motivated by anti-Zionism. She basically says, she makes several claims. She says that 4 years of spiking anti-Semitism started on the around the time Donald Trump was nominated in 2016. Really? Yeah, she says that. She also says that the waves of violence against Jews by pro-Palestinian activists and radical Muslims also threatens to undermine progress that's been made in getting American politicians to take Palestinian rights more seriously. God. She says many progressives, particularly progressive Jews, have worked hard to break this automatic identification and to open up space in the Democratic Party to denounce Israel's entrenched occupation and human rights abuses. Good Lord. He says it'll make it more difficult for that to work. You do realize, Ms. Goldberg, that, I mean, I don't even know how to take this. Israel has so many times been willing to acknowledge a Palestinian state. The problem hasn't been Israel. The problem has been the Palestinians and others in that region that don't want Israel to exist. They don't want a two-state solution. They want one state. They just don't want it to be Israel. That's what that's about. Yeah, that just – where do people get off? I really – here's a – this one's good. AOC, yeah, war hero. Yeah, I'm not calling her a war hero, folks. Says she's in therapy, and the reason is – well, basically, the melodrama or the drama of the – Capitol riots on January 6th. And she says basically they were fighting a war. Congress was involved in a war. It was a deadly siege and that it was a capture and kill operation. Now let's just for a second take away the fact that recently information has come out. The FBI has seized money from a BLM supporter, an activist who admits to not only breaching, but also to trying to incite Trump supporters. It's been proven, of course, Capitol Police let protesters into the building. It was magnetically locked, by the way. So someone had to open it. It wasn't something that they breached. It had to be opened. We saw it. You see the video. You see various footage of this. So, yeah, she fought a war, folks. She said that she's really in therapy. because they served in war. Ayanna Presley, whose office she ran to, said, "You need to recognize trauma." I don't even know where to go with that. I don't know where anyone does. But there's footage of police letting protesters in, literally letting them in. Now, one did say, I believe in your right to speak, but I don't agree with what you people are doing. Fine. That's his right to say that, too. And it was a smart thing for him to say, probably. But fighting a war, engaged in a war, just unbelievable. The uniform officer also in the video said, "Show us no attacking, no assault, and remain calm. This must be peaceful." That was protesters and the policeman talking about that. I just don't even. I got a caller on the line. Let's take this call. It's a number I don't recognize, so anything could happen here. Let's see if it does. Good evening.
Hey,
you're on Hank Short's College Sports. Good. How are you?
Right on, man.
Yeah, what's your name?
I saw you for the first time.
Okay. What's your name, sir?
John.
John, how you doing? What's up? What's up, Ryan?
Yeah, no, I just happened to see you on this blog cast.
Okay.
I just thought I'd give you guys a holler, get my foot in the door.
Excellent, excellent. Well, welcome, John.
I see you're a conservative talk show.
I am. Well, what I really am is I talk about politics and sports, and I go through some politics stuff, and then I go into some sports, and then it's called Hank Jones Poly Sports. One of the things I do toward the end is sort of talk about stories where the two get mixed together, and when it happens, it's usually not a good thing. But so that's kind of what we talk about here, John. So you got anything on your mind that jumping out at you in the news these days?
Well, I'm just listening to you. I'm a conservative big time. Yeah, I love my founding fathers, and I love the country, the United States. What you were just speaking of, you know, I wasn't aware of what provoked the shooting of that woman. Did she actually have a gun in her hand? What provoked this black guard to shoot this woman?
No, she did not have a gun in her hand.
So was his life threatened?
That's what's not really, I think that's part of what's being investigated. They just don't want us to know that. Now, at some point, she is, I haven't seen it, but she is supposedly on video breaking through a barricade, or I'm not sure if it was a window or a boarded barricade, but supposedly she comes through something, and that's what prompts it. Don't know.
She was a war hero.
Yeah, she was.
I believe she was a war hero.
Yeah.
She was in what was she in? She was in the most recent in.
I don't think she was ever in combat, which in and of itself doesn't disqualify. Yeah, but that doesn't make her a hero or non-hero. I'm not saying that, but she
was a military. She was involved in our military, and she did.
She absolutely
her life.
Was.
I think she was.
She yeah. absolutely was in our military. Absolutely. She had served. I'm going to look her up real quick while we're on, so I can just see. I mean, because, of course, you know, most people are saying, oh, she was part of QAnon or she was part of this. They don't talk about the fact that she actually served in our military, you know, which is kind of apropos of our media, you know, when you get right down
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
You know, I'll be honest with you, man. I've been listening to National Socialist Movement. I'm not part of that group, but I was just wondering what they're all about, you know. So I kind of bounce around just to kind of get a feel for what all these different organizations are talking about. And hey, did you actually have one come on your show the other day? The commander of the NSS?
No, I did not. No, I did not.
Okay, because last night you said he was on a talk show other than his own, the NSM, National Socialist Movement. Well, they actually cut me off. They just don't. They don't like me because I'm too conservative and not really on board with what they believe in. So they don't even want me to talk.
Yeah. No, we'll listen. We'll listen to anyone,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even differing viewpoints.
I mean,
even differing viewpoints.
Exactly, but that's what's so ironic is he says that he was on a talk show that was conservative and they let him talk, but then he cuts me off. So what he did was his final way to get rid of me was is he says, "Are you Jewish?" Which, you know, I'm not Jewish. And I says, but I said, yes, I'm Jewish. But actually, you know, because they know that I wasn't because I told them that what my nationalities were. And so he just wanted to have a reason again, for some reason, to cut me off. And so when I said yes, boom, I was done off the show.
Yeah, no, I won't. I won't do that. I mean, if somebody gets nasty, if somebody's, you know, excessively, you know, disgustingly vile types, and I don't mean what their content matter, but if they're just, you know, if they want to talk, you know, say nasty jokes or something, no. But ideas we'll listen to, you know, I will listen to all and any and all ideas because I just don't I don't see the point of making myself
the
look like
of taking away their First Amendment right.
Exactly.
No matter what organization you are.
Exactly.
So these
exactly.
guys don't believe in they don't believe in the Constitution. Although I'm there, I hate to hear them say that they do, but they cut me off. So they obviously really don't. This MSM National NSM 88. You know, they don't believe in the Constitution. I truly believe they want to start something totally just. You know, so I'm not with these guys. At all.
Yeah, no,
I don't.
No, I think something that it gets overlooked about what I would call the progressive left, if you or just the left, is you know they talk about tolerance and they drop, you know, if they're losing an argument with a conservative, they drop the race card or they drop this card, and I think really go ahead, John.
These guys are right, hardcore right. These are the National Socialists.
Oh, are they really?
These are they're the Nazis.
Oh well,
say that they are Nazis. You,
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. Right?
The hard right, okay, or the alt right, so to speak.
I was just trying to get an idea of what's going on here, and truly believe that they wanted to follow something like this and actually implement it into our government and be the government, and they actually do think that they can. They're going to try to do that, which is impossible. It will not happen. Nobody's
right.
going to follow that. Jump on
no.
board.
No, you know, it's funny when you say that, you know, on any, you know, any intolerant, I mean, they're just intolerant of everything. On the opposite side, you have people that claim, you know, the left claims tolerance, you know, but it's really not, as we see.
It's not.
They, you know, and so Vito, who is sort of one of the, has another show on Monday nights on this channel, he and I have been talking. It really boils down to this: fake, you know, there's intolerance, but then there's fake tolerance. But guess what? Fake tolerance usually ends up breeding intolerance. You know, if when you say you're tolerant of this and you say you're tolerant of that, suddenly we find out that they're really not all that tolerant. What they're tolerant of is anyone who's willing to submit to them. You know, and that's really it.
Exactly.
So it's just it's kind of. But you know what?
But I have in society, if people know, the liberal knows that you are conservative, and I consider myself the center. I don't consider myself right or left, see, because I believe in following everything founding fathers. So
right.
The founding fathers are obviously the center because they're the creators of this country. So they are neither left nor right. So I just believe in following whatever they have come up with in the initial creation of this country. But if they think that you are in line with that or the right, they will do things to you, like even like say going into restaurants. I've had things done to my food, where I've gotten sick. I mean, you know,
wow.
I'm not kidding you, man. Yeah, I'm in Hawaii right now, and
okay.
So it's a very liberal state, and I'm a minority here, and. Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't hold back how I feel and what do I think. I just feel like that wouldn't be part of being an American if I did.
Well, and you mentioned Hawaii. Are you there?
Even
do you live
if
there?
Do you in trouble?
Now, John, do you live
yeah,
there,
I live
or are you
here.
Just okay? Now, is
yeah,
Hawaii
yeah,
is Hawaii still all closed up?
Oh no! We've been pretty open actually. We've been actually open before most. We haven't really. The restaurants have been in. We go in and sit down at least do a percentage.
Yeah.
And no, it's fairly open. I mean, the mask, of course. But no, I left Florida, okay, in July, and Florida was in much worse condition in Michigan. So I went from Florida to Michigan, where I originally was, to get some teeth work at University of Michigan, which I had issues there because of my conservatism, because it's a very liberal institution, University
sure.
of Michigan, to the highest degree. And I actually had trouble with my situation there due to my conservatism. My orthodontist at the University of Michigan, I believe, screwed me over on my teeth. I'm not kidding you, because she even said, "Oh, you're one of those," to me, one of her patients, because
yeah,
I had a shirt on that said, "Don't tread on me." I was at that point, I was wearing "Don't tread on me" shirts, and I was really into like, I don't do it anymore. But and what other shirt was I wearing? I stand for the flag and I kneel for the cross. Where it shows a military guy kneeling for the cross for a fallen soldier. So I had a shirt, one of those shirts.
Yeah, that probably didn't go over well with a lot of folks that were out and about last at that point. I would imagine that one didn't make you a lot of friends.
Well, except those that were in my thought the same.
No,
way,
I'm saying
right?
I'm saying in Michigan, on the campus of the University of Michigan, so to speak, that would not go
I
over
stand
well.
For the flag, and I kneel for the cross. That's right.
Well, I'm glad you do, and John, I want to thank you for calling in. Great to hear from you, and please keep listening.
Keep real quick. I'd like to throw one thing at you. So, like you said, you're willing to learn
okay.
something new or different. I don't know if you've already
Absolutely.
Know this or not. You may. And I don't know if you know that the 14th Amendment was tyranny. Do you know that was a forced amendment?
Well, it's not really the only one. There are several amendments that what I would say gut. I don't want to say gut, but that. How do you say that? I would say are counter-constitutional. I believe the 17th Amendment is the one that I think is the most. I mean, forget because anything after that becomes sort of a feel good.
Right.
But the 17th,
yeah.
And I think maybe it's the 14th Amendment it's the 17th. I'm pretty sure it's. I have a buddy that'll chime
what
in here.
What is the 17th?
The 17th is what I believe made senators popularly elected instead of, senators used to be elected by state legislatures. So, your state legislators picked their Senate, their U.S. Senate.
Oh, really?
And that changed.
What
it
do you
became,
think is the better way?
Well, I think the original
what do you think
way that the, the founders wanted it because. In that case, it wasn't what it did is it made the Senate. Look what you see now. You see Nancy Pelosi going across all kinds of state lines, spending money on other states in their races. Rather than the states themselves, it eroded states' rights. I guess you could say it became a matter of politicking. It wasn't about. The legislature picking them, the legislature would pick them. They would sort of like I'd say the Electoral College, but not really because the Electoral College is a national body. But in the case of, senators were not popularly elected. They were elected by the state legislators.
You have somebody else wanting to come on. Can you keep me on and then bring somebody else, the other person who wants to,
No, I said buddy was going to chime in on what he was saying, but
okay. So what you're saying, the 17th basically says that instead of the population that we directly vote in our Senate,
our Senate.
So the individual votes the Senate seat.
You're right. And it was originally constructed.
And you don't
as,
think that the people voting is better than the legislature?
No, because the people vote for their state legislators. You know, there's a way to. I mean, if they didn't like it, they probably there were mechanisms to recall them, including by those state. You know, the state. I mean, you know, for instance, if you're from Hawaii and you send a senator and that senator doesn't act in the best interests of the people of Hawaii, the state could have recalled them. The state legislature could recall them. Now look what it is. If somebody look what it would have taken to get a Ted Kennedy out of office, for instance, it would have been.
I see what you're saying. Okay. I like that. Sure. Whatever the founding fathers created were genius. So I'm sure I would agree with you, but I was just getting at thinking, well, it kind of puts it in the hands of the people. But I know what you're saying now. There'd be more of a chance of getting rid of that senator if they do detriment.
I mean, Dianne Feinstein now. I mean, Dianne Feinstein is probably as out of it mentally as Joe Biden. But guess what? Good luck ever getting her out of the Senate. You know, it's not going to happen.
Wow.
You know, it's just not going to happen. I mean, people can. It literally, what it did is that it threw open the doors for anybody with money to handpick. Now, you can say, well, we've grown so
right,
much.
Right,
we're 300.
Right.
So we're 330 million people. But
you can get lobbyists and brainwash the public with the media, which has been going on all of our elections.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, John, I'm gonna get back to my material. I'm gonna keep you on here to listen in. So you
okay. Real quick. Give me 2 minutes, man. 3 minutes,
okay.
Because I'm gonna add to what you said about the 17th. See, what happens is, you know, when something is done, it oftentimes sets precedence for something to occur again, and it's
sure.
usually a corrupt direction, because once it's say a tyranny occurs. And the first time that I know of was the 14th Amendment after the Civil War. The Congress told the Senate of the states that if they did not vote in the 14th Amendment, they would have lost congressional representation. It took 5 years for the 14th Amendment to actually become ratified. Texas was the final state to give in. They held out for 5 years to say, no, we do not. The citizens said no to the 14th Amendment. We do not want the 14th Amendment to be, you know, put into place. So what it did is it changed our citizenship law. And basically the 14th Amendment, if you read it, it has no control whatsoever. And this is the start of our problem. From the doors for big business to take over, basically creating laws like they have the H-1B visa, which allows them to bring people in, foreigners, to take American jobs once that American worker makes over a certain amount of money, which is $60,000 in the high-tech industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's why we have today, if you notice, I don't know if you're Indian descent.
No,
I am from
not.
India, from the last 30, 40 years, I'm sorry, but their population in this country has increased probably a couple hundredfold. And it's due to the H-1B visa and them taking the jobs in the high-tech industry away from American workers there's a beautiful thing in 60 Minutes. If you go to 60 Minutes online and you put in the one you want to watch, put in H-1B visa, and it describes to you to a T how that came to be, the H-1B visa, and how that is controlling our high-tech industry and a lot of jobs being taken by foreign workers. It's really good, man. It's on 60 Minutes. You go in there and you go the H-1B visa show, and it comes up. You watch it, and it talks even about politicians that didn't realize that a lobbyist put forth that in there before they even knew what was in it, before they decided to vote on it. So they decided to vote on it, and after they read it and decided to vote on it, this politician goes, he must have went in after, and they slipped that part in there. Because I don't recall agreeing that I would have if they said that foreign workers could take American jobs. But yet they don't abolish it due to the fact that it was done that way. It's really bizarre,
okay.
Man. It's hard to believe. But anyway, so the 14th Amendment was forced and dictated.
Well, here's I'm going to bring a guy.
And that's why the 17th Amendment happened.
Okay. Okay, John, I'm going to bring a guy on named Mike. I'm going to bring a guy on named Mike who's a bit of a constitutional scholar, if you will, that I knew back in college. I want his input on this. He's
right
on the phone. So
right on.
Stay on.
Yeah,
stay
man.
On.
Let me,
yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, sir? So I want your interpretation of this because you have a little bit of a different interpretation of the 14th Amendment.
Well, first, maybe I'm not getting something here. I'd just like to understand what John thinks is the problem with the 14th Amendment in particular.
Okay.
Well, because the Congress of the time, the Lincoln administration, told the Senate of the states that if they did not vote in the 14th Amendment, they would have lost congressional representation. How do you force somebody to vote
Amendment, something? What in the 14th Amendment, though, is objectionable to you?
Well, not to me. The citizens of the United States in 1865.
Well,
me also.
What in the 14th Amendment the 14th Amendment, if you remember, leaving aside whether any state was coerced into ratifying it, the 14th Amendment, the purpose of that was to make sure that what was done at the end of the Civil War, which was to free the slaves, would guarantee that the slaves, it didn't work because, Jim Crow came in and everything. And the interpretation of the 14th Amendment. Yeah, the 14th Amendment, the interpretation of the 14th Amendment by the courts over the last 150 years, there's been some, it's been misused, let's put it that way. That's another sort of argument. But the 14th Amendment basically just says that the states can't deny equal protections of the law. Well, first it says that all residents of states are all citizens of the United States that are residents of the state. Basically, the intent was to guarantee that they would have, the full panoply of federal constitutional rights, and that would not be denied. That's what the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment are all about. And so I just, the amendment per se, I don't quite understand what in the amendment is objectionable to anyone. Now, you can talk about that whether the states were coerced, some of these states were coerced into ratifying it. Remember what happened. We had 11 states engaged in a true insurrection, not January 6th, that it was not an insurrection. I think that's a joke. But the Civil War, these states, they left the Union, they formed their own country. So now the question was bringing them back in. And one thing that
they didn't actually form their own country as of yet. They were trying to.
No, they formed, they tried. For 4 years, they had their own country. It was called the Confederate States of America. But when they were brought after they were defeated in the Civil War, in order to come back in, there were certain ground rules basically put in place that had to do with their accepting the abolition of slavery. And that included the Reconstruction Amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. And I'm not completely sure whether that was actually made a prerequisite, but basically if they wanted to get back into the United States as a full-fledged member, and they were all brought back in, by the way, they had to accept those Reconstruction Amendments to guarantee the rights of American citizens,
but
in particular Black Americans.
That's not freedom. When you have prerequisites,
well,
they never lost their citizenship. They were still all American citizens. They didn't say we are no longer citizens at any given time. And therefore it was a forced situation. And it was also the North, not only the South, that a majority just said no to the 14th Amendment. But what I'm saying is that's the problem we have today in this country. The borders are wide open. Drug flow, immigration flow. Since 1980, we've had over 100 million people enter the United States because of the 14th Amendment. We've had big business do what they want in terms of visas.
Well, I don't understand what the 14th Amendment. What does the 14th Amendment have to do with all these people that came into this, that immigrated into the United States, legally or illegally? I don't understand what the connection there is.
Oh, basically took away the power for people to make the decision to actually make laws to stop that from happening. basically broke down the
immigration. The Constitution grants the regulation of immigration into this country to the federal government. States don't have any say in that.
The original Constitution
is written.
I believe they allow maybe close to 1 million in a year legally. But with illegalness and sanctuary cities and businesses creating
I probably agree with you on that. There's a lot of crap going on in terms of the way particularly the Democratic Party.
It's taking away the power of the 14th Amendment. But it does, man. It really, truly does.
All right. Well, we'll
it basically is taking away the power for people to make the proper the ability to do the decision making and let special interest groups, which the founding fathers warned us about, to make decisions over the citizens. Big. They said once business and special interest groups start making the decisions, that's when you're in trouble, and that's when you should have a revolution. And that's where we are today. And anyways, I'm fully, like I said, everything founding fathers. So do you know what was written after the Constitution in 1787, 3 years after the Constitution? The first citizenship law by the founding fathers. You know,
civil rights were also written after the original Constitution too, but including the original.
Well, that was because of the 14th Amendment. It would never have happened unless the tyranny of the 14th Amendment happened. But
I'm talking about what happened in 1789 with the adoption of the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights.
Which included
the Fifth Amendment, which basically the 14th Amendment mirrors.
Which is giving everybody equal rights.
Yeah, which, by the way, we want.
The Fifth Amendment
is giving everybody equal rights.
What they said,
after the writing of the Constitution, they said all will have equal rights within the United States, but not all will be citizens. Then they wrote the federal naturalization laws of 1790, which in the first sentence states alien-free whites are to be citizens of the United States.
I'm not familiar with the text of that.
I'm going to close it on that note for this reason. Let's all do our reading and get back to it maybe next week or another time, because I got a lot of other material I still want to cover. But interesting debate. I mean, I think John makes one. Mike makes some great points of the content. I think John makes some great points in terms of context, in that, you know, certain things get abused, the 14th Amendment was cited in, it's been cited in several cases. For instance, it was cited in Brown versus Board of Education, Roe versus Wade, Bush versus Gore, believe it or not. I mean, so it's been kind of bounced around.
That's an abuse by the court or a misinterpretation.
Yeah.
And history.
Exactly. Loosely interpreted or misinterpreted is where I think that's where John's going, really, is that what it gets.
Also, Wong, a Chinese immigrant whose son was born in the United States and they were just residents, and they fought to say that he should be a citizen. And that was the start of the downfall.
A lot of people talk about that, but let's look, guys. I'm going to put you back. I'll keep you on the queue, but I've got to get back to my stuff. So,
okay.
I appreciate the discussion. And John, thanks for calling in. And Mike, we will talk, I'm sure, again on other stuff. So, guys, thanks for being on.
Okay, you bet. Thanks. Pat.
Thanks.
Okay.
Stuff there from John and Mike. Always interesting when people start to talk about, and we get into discussion like that, but I do have other stuff. I don't want to just let ourselves run away with arguing about it. And so something I talked about with Vito today, in New Hampshire, there's a bit of a problem. Now, we've talked about mainly Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, but it turns out election auditors in New Hampshire are saying some of their latest findings account for a large enough account for discrepancies. They found experimental confirmation that if a contest a fold through a vote can create a vote. 28%, only 28% of ballot, and I'm still not clear on this, either 28% of Republican ballots were counted or 28% were not counted. Either way, it's wrong. A Democrat candidate is one who claimed that who lost by a narrow margin claimed that there were problems with the voting machines. They've given a Governor Sununu signed a bill to give authorization for a forensic analysis, and amazingly, four Republicans gained about 300 to 400 votes each. Now remember this when you're saying that you're thinking 300 or 400 votes. New Hampshire's not a big state. 75 folded ballots voted straight Republican. Only 48 votes were recorded for them. So that would have, that would mean 28%. Another machine was found. Okay, once it said that only 28% of the votes for Republican candidates were counted. That's a serious problem, folks. We're not just talking about you know, a missed count here or a missed count there. But we're talking that's – I don't want to say fraud yet, but certainly that's a machine issue that doesn't just – you don't just simply say, oh, well, it could have accounted. That's a problem, and that's programming. I'm convinced that's programming. Now, we'll find out more, hopefully, but that sounds like a programming issue and a manipulation issue. Because it's only happening on one side. Now, meanwhile, in Arizona, a Maricopa County lawyer is demanding that 2020 auditors preserve all documents and that they may file a lawsuit. Dude, that's why they're in this audit, because of a lawsuit. What don't these people understand? You know, they're finding all kinds of things, and it's not just Arizona now. Now, Pennsylvania has not allowed any of this because Pennsylvania's Pennsylvania, but, I mean, Georgia, there's going to be some more audit. Arizona, they're finding all – they deleted directories of election databases from the 2020 election cycle. I mean – It's literally it's fraud, as I've said, and as I've talked with a buddy the other night. You know, it's not a matter. We keep hearing that, well, was it enough to do this or was it enough to do that? That's not the point. The point is, if we know that it exists, then we then have to look into it. I don't get why they say, well, it wouldn't have been enough to overturn the election. Wait a second. There's fraud isn't a matter of degrees. I don't know why I have to keep talking about that when I see these stories, but that's exactly what we are talking about. Fraud isn't subject to degrees or to measures. I mean, it's just – so I sort of talked about with John. This is from the Epoch Times. The Department of Justice seized $90,000 and charged a Black Lives Matter supporter. When he stormed the Capitol, he also sold footage to select media outlets. He also agitated rioters inside the Capitol. He was charged with weapons charges. I mean, this guy, more than 400 people have been arrested, or I should say charged, in connection with this. This guy is accused of having conversations with others who breached the building. Said, we got to get this burned. He just, I don't know what it's going to take. For, I mean, media is not going to report truth on this. That's a given. But at what point will they? I mean, will they ever? I mean, you know, they do occasionally, you know, they do come out at the end. I mean, we're here, you know, as an example, sometimes they don't mean to. But you remember, Time Magazine came out with that article a couple months ago that talked about how they beat Trump. And what they didn't tell you is how, I mean, what they all but said it, was how they cheated. What they did, getting laws changed, changing procedures. I'll give you an example. my daughter years ago went and voted, and she took her absentee ballot because that's how she voted. But she ended up voting in person with me. And so she took her ballot with her, said, this is my absentee ballot. Can I still vote? And they said, absolutely. But you have to surrender to us your absentee ballot. And she was like, why? That's how, I mean, I've got everything written down. How am I going to do it? They said, that's fine. You can go over there and write it down beforehand if you want. But you cannot walk in with your ballot, with your absentee ballot. That's right. That makes complete sense, correct? So then we're hearing now that people were showing up and not sure if they had voted. Really? Or ballots were turned in, all ballots unfolded, or all ballots folded. Now, how does an absentee ballot get turned in unfolded? You mail them. Or you fold them and put them in an envelope. Vito told me today, and some of them were different. They weren't the same paper. And yet they're saying, well, President Trump or Donald Trump continues to act as if there was some fraud. There was fraud. We know there was fraud. Let's stop with the already. I mean, it's just, well, you can see how I get riled on that kind of stuff. Let's get to some sports news. Why not? The 2022 football season, not this year, but for the Big Ten, 2022, Nebraska and Northwestern will open the season in Ireland. Well, that's kind of cool, actually. For Nebraska, it'll be their bowl game because, I'm sorry, they're not going to be good still. Northwestern's going to be the home team. It's going to be at Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin at a place called Aviva Stadium. Now, if those fans at that game are anything like soccer fans, it's going to be fun to watch on television. I don't know that the game might be any good, but the the fans, I mean, you know, those people are going to get their drunk on anyway. Pat Fitzgerald is the coach of Northwestern. So Patty Fitzgerald, I mean, that's going to be, that'll be fun. It's too bad it's over a year away, but that'll be a fun way to bring in football season that day. I assume it'll be like, you know, one of those things that'll start at 4 a.m. for people here because it's starting at noon over there or whatever. So be looking for that. You know, I mean, gives you a reason to stay glued for college football. NCAA says they're going to get name, image, and likeness clarity by June. And this is sort of a polysports issue, but, you know, look, the NCAA, states keep passing these laws about allowing athletes to use name and make money off their name, image, and likeness. The NCAA keeps kicking it down the road. Now, Congress, you know, you get various versions of it in Congress that gets put forth. And that's what the NCAA is waiting for, by the way. They're waiting for Congress to make a uniform law, which makes a lot of sense because guess what? Not everybody from the NCAA is from the same state. California makes one law. You know, Massachusetts makes another, as an example. Florida makes a different one. Jordan Bohannon of the Iowa Hawkeyes, was one of the reasons he was waiting around to decide if he was going to stay was because he wanted to see what the state legislature did on name, image, and likeness. Well, the NCAA says they're going to have legislation, or they're going to have the goal of legislation in place by July 1. Now, it may not obliterate the other state laws, per se, but it will bring some uniformity across the membership. They are involved in a U.S. Supreme Court antitrust case, so that could impact how athletes are compensated. Look, I think most of us who were college football fans going back aren't crazy about the idea of athletes getting paid. Felicia Goodson talked about last year, though. These aren't just students who happen to play football. It's a 40-hour-a-week job for these kids, no doubt about it. I mean, the idea that, now look, the idea that they're compensated with a free education, yeah, but there's a lot more to it. It's pretty obvious over the years that, look, the game has gotten bigger, the revenue has gotten bigger. I'm not for revenue sharing per se, but it's true. People go to watch these kids. They don't go to watch the referees. They don't go to watch the band. So as James Caan said in the movie The Program, how many people come here to watch a chemistry experiment? But, yeah, the NCAA has dropped the ball in terms of the fact they did not get things in place. They have not been good about making it uniform. In the SEC, the old Southeast Conference, they sent each school $23 million to make up for financial losses related to COVID-19. Now, they estimate an average shortfall per school of $45 million per athletic program. I can only speak for the Iowa program. I know has taken loans, university overall. Now, it's a $322 million total distribution between their 14 schools. But here's the thing. It's not money that's just been sitting there. People are thinking that, oh, you see, that's how flush they are. No. They're paying it from future revenue. They're getting a loan and running against future revenues generated through their media rights. They have another media deal beginning in 2025. They do expect that at 2025 and after, they will continue to increase their annual distributions. They've got a 10-year deal with ESPN starting in 2024, for example. So, yeah. I wish Kevin Warren and the Big Ten would have thought of something like this, because NCAA's annual distribution, by the way, fell 40% because of the cancellation of winter and spring sports. The Student Assistance Fund, that pays for things like insurance, clothes, computers, et cetera, that was slashed from $87 million to $27 million across the country nationally. So, yeah. You know, Kevin Warren, get on the stick. If there's probably some programs that are hurting, and the Big Ten does have those media rights, and those were exercised. Big Ten didn't cancel their season in football. Vito makes a good point in the chat room. He says, basically, the idea by the Democrat Party, he calls it the Democrat Communist Party, DNCP in this case, is create doubt and shrug off election. Woes, as we would call it. Brilliant point, though, is that what they're doing, by making light of the 2020 election, they cut off further problems with, you know, like I said, as these election things go, getting away from the sports for a second, as these election things go, again, Trump's not going to come back and become president. That's not happening. I mean, unless and until every state says, well, we have to overturn it, you know, if there are all these problems are found and substantiated, that's not the same as their election's been certified. Overturning a certification of election would be a massive undertaking. And frankly, as I've said, if it is found, I don't think Donald Trump would want to be. He'd be crazy to want to come back and be president in that scenario. But, yeah, Vito nailed it. The news, they're trying to shrug it off by saying, oh, Trump continues to make these stupid false allegations. We know they're not false. We know that. Back to sports. A Texas football recruit is skipping his senior year of high school to concentrate on getting prepared to play at the University of Texas. Now, he's one of the top-ranked running backs in the 2022 class. He's going to sit out his senior year this fall for 2021. He says he's going to work on his academics. That's crazy. I mean, shouldn't his academics be in place? Maybe they're not, though. He says it's a brutal sport, the wear and tear. But you know what? Does that not sound like a me, I? There is no I in team, but there is a me, so to speak. Last year, he ran for 2,150 yards and 30 touchdowns, averaged 9.5 yards per carry. His decision doesn't change his commitment, but Texas says they were aware of it. He's the first big-name prospect in that class to announce he will sit out a season. Several prospects in the 2021 class have opted not to play, mostly because of COVID stuff. Travion Henderson, who's an Ohio State running back signee, he was one of those who decided not to transfer to another high school when his season was pushed back, train and prepare. But that was a little bit different. This is a voluntary because Texas hasn't canceled football. They're not going to. Probably going to have fans in the stands. But he's just saying he's just going to just forego his senior year. You know, I know it's not my business or it's not my call. But, boy, you know, he's selling. He's stepping out on his teammates. You know, presumably it was his high school teammates that got him there or his high school coaches that got him there. That just seems wrong to me that a recruit for 2022 would step out on his team and just say, oh, I'm done. I'm not playing. That's just me. But, you know, that's I just see it as kind of selfish. But, you know what? We're going to see it more and more, I'm afraid. Oh, speaking of, you know, I talked about in Italy that tram cable car crashing. China, nothing to do with COVID. They had a marathon. It was an ultra marathon. 21 people died. They hit extreme weather, evidently. They were running an ultra marathon up in the mountains. They faced hail, freezing rain, gale force winds. And they're at high altitude. All-night rescue operation involved more than 700 people. Confirmed 151 were safe out of 772 participants, 21 dying. They're on an extremely narrow mountain path, an altitude of 6,500 to 9,800 feet. It was a 100-kilometer race, which is like 62 miles. And these were well-known runners. One of them was a guy that had won a 100-kilometer race before. They weren't rookies. A woman said there were no predictions of extreme weather for the day of the race. However, another local branch said the National Early Warning Information Center had warned of stuff for the past 3 days of hail and strong winds. It's been held four times before, though, but whew. Man, 21, I mean, can you imagine, if 21 people died in a you know, like in the New York Marathon, they'd be calling for canceling that thing. Whew, 21 people. That's kind of frightening. I mean, if you ask me anyway. This is a sad story. University of Cincinnati women's soccer player Allie Sedlowski drowned last Saturday at age 21. Now, I normally do obituaries and tributes at the beginning of the show, but this is a current player, so I'd kind of rather put it in an actual sports news. This is a cautionary tale. She was seen hanging from the platform of a boat before she disappeared into the water. She was not wearing a life jacket. Search crews found her body around 1 a.m. Sunday, May 23rd. She just completed her sophomore season. She didn't play her senior this year because of injury. She was a standout student. She had multiple semester awards for a 4.0 GPA. I'm sorry. Things can go wrong that quickly. It seems kind of trite to say treasure every moment or tell people you love them. I know we hear that and we say, oh, gosh, that's hokey. But it's true, you know. It's also true that not being safe while boating or swimming or jet skiing or wakeboarding or whatever can lead to tragic accident and death. It's getting to be that time of year, folks. So be safe on the water. Be safe on the road. Be safe at your campsite. If you're hiking in the mountains, anywhere else you take your recreation, be safe. You know, this is a little more high profile, so it seems more tragic. It's just tragic anyway. She's probably having a good time on a boat and hanging from the boat. Something happened. She could have hit her head. Who knows? But, man, that's just sad stuff. It's sad to have that kind of thing happen. So let's be safe. Remember to be safe as we're getting into that season. It's also hurricane season coming up, tornado season in a lot of places. So ESPN, I'm going to talk about a hit piece they did a little bit later, but They did a couple good articles this week. One on tampering. They said tampering has basically arrived in college football and basketball, and it looks like NBA free agency. Basically, one coach said the cheaters just keep cheating. Now, what they're talking about is this. you have a transfer portal now. You are allowed to put your name in a portal and say, I am interested in transferring. Coaches from other schools can then contact you. Now, what's happening is that people are reaching out through high school coaches, through friends, and it's happening more freely, you know, with the free transfer. The problem is it's until the player enters their name in the transfer portal, they are not to have contact. If a player contacts a school, the school is supposed to say no. Schools themselves are not allowed to contact. But what's happening, of course, is players are putting out feelers. Schools are putting out feelers. One Power Five coach basically said, it's the wild, wild west. This isn't about just regular transfer. What they're really worried about, too, is that high school recruiting is going to suffer because there is a 25-player limit to that. And you can only have so many scholarship kids at a time. So high school kids are going to get aced out of some places. One ACC coach said there's a lot of shady crap going on. He said teams are poaching kids. Now, I laugh when they say, well, that's probably why Roy Williams quit. Roy Williams wasn't exactly Mr. Squeaky Clean. Nick Saban says there needs to be a rule of civility. Well, you know what? Easy for him to say, but this guy's benefiting. He's picked up a couple transfers. High-profile transfers in some cases. You know, so I don't feel so sorry for Nick Saban when he says there needs to be civility. But Missouri coach Eli Drinkwitz says NCAA oversight, that's a joke. He says, look what's happened. The FBI investigation of college basketball, which we talked about 2 years ago originally on my very first show with Vito. That was one of our big topics, was the FBI college basketball scandal. And what's happened? One coach has been fired, I think, Sean Miller at Arizona, and that had as much to do with his record this year as it did to do with anything that happened. I mean, they didn't care as long as he was winning. And Sonny Dykes at SMU said, basically, it's the old thing. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. He said, you know what? We want people that are ethical enough that they don't fall prey to that. But guess what? You do have to win. It's high pressure. And so some coaches out there are taking that extra little step. But they're basically tampering. Now, here's the thing. You're no longer are you just recruiting. You are recruiting your own existing players. That's tough. That's not easy on a coaching staff. It's babysitting. But it's more like they're having to coddle. They're literally having to coddle now. And that's just, you know, no coaches shouldn't have to go through that. They shouldn't. And guess what, though? Guess what else? The non-Power 5 schools are going to take hits. Because a kid will prove himself. Let's say he's in the MAC or Conference USA or even the American Athletic Conference, like, you know, which is getting better all the time with schools like UCF and Louisville and Memphis and Houston. Those guys are going to start getting poached. Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm not sure that this whole free transfer, everything is going to go the way that we would like. Here's another. This one's a little sadder, but it's a good story, and ESPN did a good job on it. A kid from Austin Peay University in Clarksville, Tennessee, he was a former defensive back. He was hoaxed. He got a text from someone saying that they were an Atlanta Falcons assistant, and they invited him for a tryout at the team's rookie mini camp. Now, this is for undrafted players. Or I should say, it's for rookies, so it included undrafted players. So he wasn't contacted by that. He thought he was. But someone was texting him from an Atlanta number, pretending to be defensive coordinator for the Falcons. So naturally he was excited. He arrived at the team's practice facility, and he was turned away. ESPN did a good job covering it because, you know, look, this was a terrible hoax to play on a kid. Terrible. He was obviously good enough to get some interest because he is going to get a chance. He's going to get a chance to go to a camp now for players that did not get drafted and did not sign undrafted free agent contracts. He started out as a walk-on at Austin Peay, became a first-team All-Ohio Valley Conference player by his senior season. That was 2019. 2020, of course, with the COVID, the draft was a little different. So, yeah, somebody did that to him. What a terrible thing. I'm sorry. That's just a terrible, terrible thing to do. The ESPN pointed out that he is getting his break. So good for him. Good for ESPN for bringing it to light. I'm not always a fan of ESPN. I think they, you know, I'm going to talk about a little hit piece that they did later on. LaJuan James. LaJuan James broke protocols. He went to an event with a bunch of people with no masks on, which is an NCAA health and, or NBA health and safety protocol. Now, whether you can argue the mask thing all you want, but it's an NBA rule, and he broke it. Think he's getting suspended? No. Think he's having a quarantine? No. I bring up another LaJuan story, but the problem is it would break my last thing I want to do. Here's another one. John Cena, former WWE star, he has apologized to China, saying, "I'm sorry for my mistake." What was he sorry for? Calling Taiwan a country. Here's what he says. "I must say now, it's very, 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 very important that I love and respect even more China and the Chinese people." So he called China a country while he's promoting the Fast and the Furious. I don't know which number it is. Oh, F9. Fast and Furious 9. He said, "Taiwan is the first country that can watch F9, he told a broadcaster in Mandarin. So naturally, the Chinese got hacked off. So Cena apologized for calling Taiwan a country. Can you believe that? Can't either. Unbelievable. Okay, here's the hit piece on President Trump. ESPN says they found the real villain in the Spygate scandal in the NFL. Remember back in 2007, 2008, there was a problem where the Patriots were caught spying, supposedly. Well, now ESPN says that Arlen Specter, who was making a big deal about it, was approached by a mutual friend. He and Robert Kraft of the Patriots, they had a mutual friend, President Trump, who supposedly approached Arlen Specter that enough campaign money could come his way if Specter made this go away. Here's the problem. Arlen Specter's been dead since 2012. There's no evidence of it. His son is speaking up, but and a Philadelphia personal injury attorney, no less, his son. Now they're revealing it, that Trump dangled campaign cash if Specter would drop the Spygate inquiry. And that Trump told Specter he was acting on behalf of Robert Kraft. Now, senior advisor to Trump, Jason Miller, said this is absolutely false. Never happened. Robert Kraft is saying the same thing. Never happened. But, yeah, go on ESPN and you can look at this hit piece. Now, you know, ESPN, it gets a little too political. I'll say that. But in this case, wow. Bringing this, I don't know what their objective was, because Spygate happened 13 years ago. Not even sure why they brought it up, except the fact, especially when it's not substantiated. Unbelievable. I mean, some people just cannot leave it alone. Now, I think it's partly that there's been some success in the the ranks of these election issues? Certainly. I think that's been a big factor. Absolutely been a factor. Not sure why else they would. I mean, just, but yeah, that's the good and bad of ESPN this week. Here's from the Twitterverse. Daniel Baranowski, he says, I live in Florida, and Ron DeSantis is unquestionably one of the finest governors in America today. The Bush family had its day. Now their open borders cheering isn't only anti-American, it's nothing but political animus toward Trumpers. Got that right. Absolutely. Here's one from a guy named Tom Payne. I like him. He said, Hollywood celebrities are pleading with movie fans, please go back to theaters. Yeah, isn't it amazing that we were seeing all these Hollywood types doing their quarantine videos and how we should quarantine properly? And you're heartless if you want to go out in public without a mask. You're heartless if you don't get tested. You're heartless if you don't get the vaccine. All of a sudden, they're begging people to go back to theaters. Now, I get it. That's ultimately what brings in the most revenue. I think streaming is a great venue, but I don't think people want to pay $20 to stream movies. You know, when you can stream Hulu for $6 a month with ads, why would you pay $20 to stream a movie on your same place where you're watching your TV? I mean, presumably the movie experience is about the big screen. Now, the other problem, of course, you spend $20 for two people at a movie, you spend $50 for food. You know, there's that little problem. But seriously, I mean, I just can't believe they're actually begging for that now. And this one's kind of a laughy and kind of a not. If you remember, Mike Pompeo was leading an effort to hunt down the COVID lab theory for the coronavirus. The Biden administration has shut it down. Get this, over concerns about quality of evidence. Literally, they're trying to they've shut down an investigation into the origin of the coronavirus and whether or not it originated in a lab there. Now, I get that we don't want to just come out willy-nilly and be anti-Asian. Hate crimes against Asians is wrong. Nobody's going to argue that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about we need to find out what happened. And we talked about Fauci and his gain of function research, and that they gave grant money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Remember, Charles Lieber from the Wuhan Institute of Technology at Harvard being arrested for not revealing ties. All of it. And then they just shut it down. I mean, literally, can you imagine if this had been the reverse and President Trump decided to shut down such research or such investigation? Ballistic is not a big enough word for what we would have gotten there. Hey, we're coming up on the end of it, folks. I want to thank John for his call, first-time listener, and Mike for chiming in. Good debate on some constitutional stuff, and that's a good idea to do that once in a while. You really do want to you don't want to just always think and keep your head in the sand and say, this is what I believe and it's why. You know, this discussion is a good thing. I want to thank Vito for being in the chat room, Sue from New Mexico, who – look for her on Twitter. Follow her. Look for Sue from New Mexico. I think she also goes by LoveAmerica615. She comes up with some great stuff. Thank you, Sue. She sends stuff all the time. Big Sister for being here. Brother Tommy was on earlier. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. T. Bodie was here earlier. He was not in the chat room, but he was on the phones. And that's my last thing I want to talk about. T. Bodie and I, along with Hawkeye Mike, along with Indie Hawk KB, Brother Tommy. We were all not all together at the same time, but we were at Iowa back in the early to mid-80s. And T. Bodie was visiting my area this past week, and I got a chance to get together with him. I haven't seen him since the Iowa Capital One Bowl in Orlando in 2005. Got a chance to catch up, got a chance to hear about them, their drive from where he lives to where I live, the area. He's visiting other people where he used to work with and stuff. It's just a great chance to catch up. I can't say enough, folks. Stay in touch with your friends. And when you get that chance to visit, don't blow it off. Do not blow it off. You may never get it again. It was great to see him. We always talk about we're going to get together for a Hawkeye game, a bunch of us, and try to get together. But it's not easy to do. So when that chance is there, do it. Hey, next week, remember, I've got the first show where I'm going to be featuring local businesses from around the country. I have two so far for sure that are committed. I'm still working on another one. It'll be 2 to 3. I thought I'd go with 4 originally, but that leaves little room for anything else. So if I have 2 or 3, gives them a good amount of time, and then we can banter about other stuff as well. Got someone in I'll let them talk when we but I'm talking to local businesses, small independent businesses, about what they've gone through with the COVID stuff, what it's like to be a small business person in the, especially in the economic environment and climate today. I promise you, it'll be good stuff. So tune in next week. Don't forget about the other shows on GPR, Global Patriot Radio. And check out some of the other stuff. Joseph Gibson's got a show on Blog Talk Radio. Tim Tapp with Tap into Truth. Annie with Southern Sense. Check them all out. G-Ski Rocks, Dave and G-Ski Rocks on Friday. Great shows. Great to listen to. And they, you know, everybody's got their own style and their own thing that they concentrate on. So give them all a listen. And come on back next week. We'll talk about local businesses, independent businesses, and we'll, of course, talk politics and sports. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being here, folks.